Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast considering rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. My name's Corey Hazelhurst, and my partner in propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Hey, Corey.
And we are joined by lecturer in German and European politics at the University of Birmingham, Dr. Charlotte Galpin. Hello, Charlie.
Hi, Corey.
So, this is a special request episode, like we've turned into some sort of daytime radio show or something, which is very nice. If you do have a request for an episode, listeners, do send it in, unless it's about Phil Wallace. And this request comes from Tim in Birmingham. Tim has asked us the question, why can't Theresa May fire Boris Johnson? That's what we're going to talk about after this very jaunty theme tune. In this episode, we are breaking our no alcohol rule. Regular listeners, including Tim, hello Tim, we only drink alcohol when we're talking about Donald Trump. However, we've made a slight exception to this because we're talking about Boris Johnson. You were saying, Charlie, the Germans in particular often bracket Boris Johnson in the same category as Donald Trump. So I wondered if you wouldn't mind elaborating on that a little bit.
Yeah, so basically, often when the Germans are talking about Brexit or what's going on in the US, basically Boris and Trump are seen as part of the same populist phenomenon, shift to nationalism. And Boris Johnson is basically seen as someone who lies, will say racist things, someone who's kind of motivated by his own personal goals rather than kind of broader sense of public interest. Both of them put into the same category and are kind of described collectively. It's not just Boris Johnson, actually, it's other kind of leading figures in the Leave campaign, Nigel Farage. They're seen kind of collectively as a threat to liberal democracy. So this is part of a nationalist populist trend that's sweeping across the West.
And I suppose that there was that international reaction when Theresa May appointed Boris Foreign Secretary about 18 months ago. A lot of it was because of the racist things he said. So he talked about watermelon smiles. He used words I'm not going to repeat on the podcast to describe people from Africa. I suppose at the time, either it was a stroke of genius or
a stroke of madness caused by a stroke.
How has Boris been as Foreign Secretary, Steve?
I mean, not too long ago, he was in Myanmar and started just quoting the road to Mandalay in front of all of the officials and had to be told by the British ambassador, basically, stop that. They don't view Rudyard Kipling fondly here.
Strange that.
I think it's safe to say he's not doing a brilliant job.
I assume that Tim's asked the question essentially because he should be sacked, presumably, for his remarks about Nazanin Zaghari Ratcliffe. She's a British-Iranian citizen, went to Iran to see her family and was put in prison. And in remarks to the Foreign Affairs Select Committee, Boris says that, as far as he knew, she was training journalists, which is not true. Miss Zaghari Ratcliffe works for Reuters, but in no way trains any journalists. She was there to see her mum, who she hadn't seen in years. She was there with her grandchildren, I think, who hadn't obviously seen their grandmother. And because of what Johnson said, the Iranians said, look, this is proof that she was here as an imperialist running dog agent or what have you. We'll give her another 5 years in prison.
Yeah, and under any normal circumstances, that would be a resigning or firing offence for a foreign minister or a foreign secretary to cause an increase of a prison sentence of a British citizen in a foreign country because you didn't read the brief or you misspoke so badly is absolutely unacceptable.
But it's also the fact that he then refused to apologise after that in the Commons. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, bear in mind, Emily Thornberry had to resign from the Shadow Cabinet for tweeting a picture of a house. Peter Mandelson had to resign when there was no question of impropriety with the Hinduja brothers. It just looked like there might be impropriety. The bar for resigning from the Cabinet is set very, very high for a very good reason. And Boris didn't just jump over the bar, he kind of rocketed over the bar.
Yeah, and again, this kind of links back quite strongly to kind of the core focus of why is Boris in the cabinet? Because under any other circumstances, he wouldn't be now. And, you know, we're seeing time and time again evidence that he is not capable of doing this job and that he is ill-suited in temperament to this job.
And if he had any vestige of pride or shame, he would have resigned anyway. Mm-hmm. And the fact he hasn't, I think, feeds in with what you were saying earlier, Charlie, that, I mean, I think the Germans probably have it quite right in that he's someone who is quite calculating, is someone who cares more about his leadership ambitions, quote-unquote, than anything else.
Kind of the key thing for us to kind of analyse it is actually answering that question of why is Boris in the cabinet? Because it is so, so unusual for someone to be in his position and have the job he has with so many mistakes under his belt.
And with so little experience. So, yes, he was Mayor of London, which I suppose is a reasonably big job. I mean, London's a reasonably big place. His only front bench role, I believe, was as shadow higher education spokesman, which he left, I believe, because he ended up lying to Michael Howard.
So normally, to get to the Foreign Secretary role, you would spend some time in kind of more junior ministerial positions, or you have perhaps a less important
bag carrier role.
And then you move into the Foreign Secretary.
Yeah, you work up the greasy pole. And I suppose it goes back to how Theresa May set out her cabinet after becoming Prime Minister in June 18 months ago, in that all the jobs that were dealing with Britain's place in the world, so international trade, Brexit negotiations, Foreign Secretary and Department for International Development, they were all held by Brexiters.
Mm-hmm. And you can even see it in the hiring of and then promotion of replacements for ministers that have resigned recently. Penny Mordaunt became Secretary for Department for International Development. She was a Brexiter herself, somewhat famously going onto, I think it was the Andrew Marr show, and talking about how Turkey was absolutely about to join the European Union when it was a complete and utter either lie or misreading of the situation, depending on how generous you want to be. So though very much that kind of that Brexit balance in government is something that Theresa May is very concerned with. And I think that's one of the major reasons why Boris is still in a job currently.
It feels like she did that in the hope that maybe that would mean that the Brexiters would own Brexit. They would carry the can. And maybe May's personal reputation wouldn't be that damaged by the fact that she'd appointed a bunch of incompetents who didn't understand the EU to negotiate Brexit. I have to admit that strategy is looking more and more dodgy.
I think that's what in Yes Minister they would call a very brave choice.
Mm, a courageous choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she's kind of coming across at the moment as unable to control her ministers and not having the authority to sack ministers that
need firing.
They clearly need to go.
Even if she wanted to keep the balance, I'm sure there are other people. Though she could undertake a wider reshuffle, hypothetically, in which you had a balance of leavers and remainers. She could do a wider reshuffle and bring in some of the intake from 2010, 2015, and bring in that newer blood of Tory MPs. And there'd be a mix of leavers and remainers. I mean, leavers like Dominic Raab, for instance, who, as you were saying before, Charlie, that they've Dominic Raab is working steadily up that greasy pole. He has had that kind of front bench experience. Yes, there's cabinet balance, but also, why has she not undertaken a wider reshuffle?
Well, I think that effectively boils down to the concern that there are far too many people in the cabinet currently that if they were kicked out would then be able to cause trouble for Theresa May. Even with that reshuffle, she'd still be in quite a precarious position as Prime Minister and leader of the Conservative Party. And having people like Boris Johnson on the outside with the freedom to cause trouble and the freedom to, as they say, urinate into the tent rather than outside it, that is something that is undoubtedly coming into her political calculations here.
It's strange that someone who began by sacking so many big beasts and so many ministers, so George Osborne was sacked, mm-hmm. Michael Gove was sacked, Anna Sowerby was sacked, Nicky Morgan was sacked. Now she can't do the same thing again.
And I think that actually gets to one of the root causes why she can't get rid of the likes of Johnson. By sacking the likes of Anna Sowerby, Nicky Morgan, George Osborne, okay, granted, Osborne isn't in the House of Commons anymore, but he's very much in that vein as well.
Is he still involved with how... is he still interested in how Theresa May is doing as
Prime Minister? I think he might be, yeah.
I've heard a few things.
Yeah, but by getting rid of those kind of people, and to begin with, Michael Gove as well. Obviously, Gove came back into the fold, into the cabinet. What you end up with is a massive gap in terms of potential talent and people moving forward. This is one of the major problems that the Tories have, in that the people that Theresa May have brought in are relatively old guard. A number of them have run for the Conservative Party leadership multiple times. Your Osbornes, your Sowerbys, your Nicky Morgans, and even your Goves were from a slightly different generation. The one after that, for the majority of them, they either came up with David Cameron or after or under David Cameron. And as a result of that, Theresa May and getting rid of those people don't want to come back necessarily, because they, like Anna Sowerby and Nicky Morgan, aren't going to want to sign up to the Brexit line that the government is going for.
It's quite interesting, a lot of those are prominent Conservative Remainers as well.
Yeah.
These are the ones calling for the softest of Brexits.
Yeah.
Calling for the proper Thatcherite position of the single market.
Yeah. Exactly. But because you've got those people who have been fired and aren't likely to want to serve again, you've then got a gap in the talent. There are a lot of potential people who could fill in front bench and cabinet roles, but an awful lot of them don't have that much experience yet. I mean, you've mentioned Dominic Raab, but I can think of him and maybe Rob Harfen. Maybe.
He was one of the ones who got sacked as well.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
There's not that many of them either, and to properly clear out the government in that wider reshuffle that Theresa May would need, she's not got enough people that she can easily move up, which means she either takes a risk on some of the newer people or she doesn't do it. And I think her conservative with a small c nature on these sorts of things means she's not prepared to take that risk. And you can kind of see why. If you've got people who are unproven and you don't know what they can do, it kind of makes sense to stick with the devil you know, rather than potentially bring in somebody who could, in theory at least, be even worse in other ways.
How could you be worse than Boris Johnson as Foreign Secretary?
Jacob Rees-Mogg.
So, moving on. I suppose in Theresa May's case, the devil you know often is Damien Green. As you say, he's one of the older guard that she appointed as de facto Deputy Prime Minister, one of her oldest political allies. I think they're at university together. Obviously, he's undergoing investigation at the moment. I think you're right in the sense that they almost went back a generation to people like Damien Green, who probably entered Parliament a little bit before people like Nicky Morgan and Anna Sowerby. And I think what a lot of people are saying that Theresa May should do now is basically do a Michael Howard. So when he became leader after Ian Duncan Smith left, he appointed people like David Cameron and George Osborne to front bench roles. And that was when Cameron first got his chance at frontline politics and gave him a profile to beat David Davis in the 2005 leadership election. I think there's a really good case for Theresa May doing it now. I think the reason she's not doing it is because in many ways it's very easy for us to say she should have a wider reshuffle. I think if it was a board game and you were behind in the game like Theresa May is doing, you probably would take that risk if it's a parlour game. I think it's something very different when you are the Prime Minister, and I think if Theresa May does it, it will hasten her departure as Prime Minister.
Yeah.
It might not be today, it might not be tomorrow, but it will be soon.
Yeah, and I think that kind of gets to the heart of the matter, is that brings us back to the core kind of topic as well. Theresa May can't take a targeted action against Boris Johnson, because that makes it all about Boris Johnson and gives him an opportunity to basically martyr himself for the Brexit cause or something, and gives him the opportunity to cause more trouble and to make him the story again, which is exactly what he wants. That means the only way to get rid of him is to do a wider reshuffle and make it all about the renewal of the Conservative Party in some form. But if she can't do that, for the various reasons that you've outlined, then she's stuck with the people she's got, which means Boris stays put.
If May sacked him, that he would stand for leader. I can't quite believe I'm asking this about someone who, when he stood for leader last time, his campaign manager resigned because and stood against him because he said he was fundamentally unsuited to the role of being Prime Minister. But do you think there is that chance that if May was to sack Boris, that he would, if not, either do a Geoffrey Howe and try and make a speech and bring her down, or would actually stand against her?
Do I think Boris Johnson has enough of an ego to stand again for to try and be Conservative Party leader and by definition Prime Minister? Absolutely, I do.
You know, we've seen that his political views, his ideological leanings are very malleable according to how they serve his kind of personal ambitions. So yeah. I can very much see him launching a kind of campaign
In some form
against May.
Now, the issue is, how successful could he be? I don't think he would be very successful now. Whilst there is a hard line of Brexiters who might support him just because of his position on Brexit, he's managed to burn an awful lot of bridges in the parliamentary Tory party. And the only way you get through to a leadership, to the members, is to be in the top two candidates as voted for by the parliamentary Tory party. I think he would struggle at that now. In the past, he may easily have walked it. And even if he did get through to the second ballot, to the wider membership, I don't think it would be a certain thing for him at all anymore. When you look at the polling that websites like Conservative Home do, and generally speaking, it's been shown that the polling of Tory party members on there is quite representative. No, he's not polling as well as he used to do. He's now, like, Jacob Rees-Mogg is currently the front runner in those polls.
Seal the bunker.
Yeah, I know.
Stock up on tinned food.
Thankfully, I don't think he wants it, so we're fine.
That's not the attitude, Steve.
Boris is nowhere near the runaway favourite with the membership as he might have been at one point. I think, to be honest, his time has come and gone. A lot of Boris's charm, such as it was very much based on him being different. He won London twice. Let's not underestimate that fact. That is a very impressive thing for him to have done as a Conservative. But I think the axe just gone stale.
I'm also kind of sceptical that now is the time that he would launch a kind of leadership. I still kind of expect the rest of the party to kind of step back and allow Theresa May to carry through Brexit. Mm-hmm. And once Brexit is done, then I think we'll see a challenge to her leadership. But I'm not sure that anyone around her wants to take on her job at the moment. And I think this is about the glass cliff, you know, how women are often pushed into leadership positions when they're likely to fail, when the ship is basically sinking. And I have the feeling that they don't want to be in charge of Brexit, but as soon as Brexit's done and May has carried it through, then I feel like we'll have a more kind of...
In order for there to be any kind of challenge, somebody's probably going to have to push May. I don't think she's going to sacrifice herself. I don't think she's that way inclined. I think she genuinely does want to do certain things. You might agree or disagree with them, but I do think she has a focus and on trying to build a legacy for herself, which isn't just Brexit. And as such, that means someone's going to have to put the knife into her back. And really, that needs to happen sooner rather than later for Boris. Otherwise, you just end up with him missing his moment, and he can't do it himself because the assassin is never the king, never becomes king.
Which is the history of the Conservative Party that he perhaps should have
paid attention to
last time.
Yep.
Has that answered your question, Tim? I'm not really sure. I think it's hopefully gone some way to answering it.
Basically, Theresa May's 2 weeks, she needs to balance the cabinet with Brexiters and Remainers, and she can't just get rid of Johnson on his own. She needs to do a wider reshuffle, but she can't do that because she's 2 weak.
What he said. So, we have a podcast out on Sunday in which we talk about the German election or coalition talks or lack thereof. We have a website, which is notenoughchampagne.com. We have a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/notenoughchampagne. Our logo is designed by James Cram. You can follow him on Twitter at James Cram. And our theme tune is Plucky Good Times by Dave Depper. I'm at Paperback Writer.
I'm at Centre Radical.
I'm not on Twitter.
Happy plotting, unless you're Boris Johnson, in which case please stop plotting, just resign.
Same goes for Jacob Rees-Mogg.
He can't resign.
But he can.
Well, from the